Chapter 33. At that moment, halfway across the world, Jim Hanamura would have given his new Corvette and his Redondo Beach bachelor pad state-of-the-art sound system to trade places with any man on that bus in Virginia. The cold night rain soaked his clothes and skin as he lay covered by mud and rotting leaves in a drainage ditch. The police and the uniformed security force that were hunting him had canvassed the area and moved on 10 minutes earlier. But he lay there in the slime, trying to rest and formulate a plan of action. He painfully rolled over a garage of a small house who was bent under the open hood of a small delivery truck. He dropped back in the ditch and passed out for the third time since being shot during his escape from Edo City. When Hanamura regained consciousness, he wondered how long he had been out. He held up his right wrist, but the watch had stopped, broken when he wrecked his car. It couldn't have been very long, however, because the driver of the delivery truck was still tinkering with its engine. The three slugs from the security guard's automatic rifles had caught him in the left arm and shoulder. It was one of those flukes, a 1,000-to-1 unforeseen incident that catches a professional operative from a blindside. His plans had been precise and exactingly executed. He'd forged the security clearance pass of one of Suma's chief structural engineers by the name of Jiro Miyaza, who closely resembled Hanamura in face and body. Entering Edo City and walking through the checkpoints leading to the design and construction department had been a piece of cake. None of the guards saw anything suspicious about a man who returned to his office after hours and worked on past midnight. All Japanese men put in long hours, seldom working a normal 8-hour day. The inspection was loose, yet tighter than what it takes to walk into the Pentagon building in Washington. The guards nodded to Hanamura and watched as he slipped his pass card into the electronic identity computer. The correct buzz sounded, a video camera's light flashed green, and the guards waved him through, satisfied that Hanamura was cleared to enter that section of the building. With so many people passing in and out all hours of the day and night, they failed to recall that the man Hanamura was impersonating had only left for home a few minutes previously. Hanamura tossed three offices in an hour and a half before he struck pay dirt. In the rear of a drawer of a draftsman's table, he found a rolled cylinder of rough sketches of a secret installation. The sketches should have been destroyed. He could only assume the draftsman had neglected to drop them in a nearby shredder. He took his time, ran the drawings through a copy machine, inserted them in an envelope, and put the originals back in the drawer exactly as he found them. The envelope he curled and taped to the calf of one leg. Once he passed the guards on the way out, Hanamura thought he was home free. He walked out into the vast atrium and waited his turn to take an elevator that opened on a pedestrian tunnel leading to the parking level where he'd left his Murmoto four-wheel drive pickup truck. There were 20 people packed in the enclosure, and Hanamura had the misfortune of having to stand in the front row. When the doors opened on his parking level, fate dealt him a bad hand. Pushed ahead by the crowd behind him, Hanamura stepped right into Jiro Miyaza. The engineer, whose identity Hanamura borrowed, had exited the adjacent elevator with his wife and two children. They were headed for the same parking level for an evening drive above ground. Inexplicably, Miyaza's eyes were drawn to the clearance pass clipped to Hanamura's pocket. For a moment, he simply stared. Then his eyes widened, and he looked into Hanamura's face with disbelieving eyes. "What are you doing with my pass?" he demanded indignantly. "Internal security," Hanamura answered calmly with an air of authority. "We're examining security areas to see if the guards are alert and pick us out. I happen to be issued your name and ID number." "My brother is assistant head of security. He never mentioned such an inspection to me." "We don't advertise," Hanamura said, glaring at Miyaza, who refused to back down. Hanamura tried to edge his way past Miyaza, but the engineer grabbed his arm. "Wait, I want to verify this." Hanamura's lightning move was almost undetectable. He rammed his palm into Miyaza's chest, breaking the sternum. The engineer gasped for air, clutched his chest, and sank to his knees. Hanamura pushed him aside and calmly walked toward his vehicle, which he had backed into its stall. He quickly threw open the unlocked door of the Murmoto V6 four-wheel drive, slipped behind the wheel, and turned the ignition key. The engine started on the second turn, and he shoved the shift lever into drive and headed for the exit ramp and the gate only one level above. He might have made it if Miyaza's wife and children hadn't screamed their heads off and pointed frantically toward Hanamura. A nearby security guard rushed over and questioned them. He barely made any sense of their hysterical jabbering, but he was smart enough to use his portable radio to alert the guards manning the main entry gate. Nothing went Hanamura's way. He was a fraction of a second too late. A guard stepped from the gatehouse and raised his hand for Hanamura to stop. Two of his comrades, posted on opposite sides of the exit tunnel, lifted their weapons at the ready position. And then there was the heavy steel barrier shaft across the drive. Hanamura took in the scene with one trained glance. There was no stopping in an attempt to bluff his way past. He braced himself for the impact, slammed his foot against the gas pedal, and crouched down in the seat as far as he could go. He struck the shaft partly on the raised bumper of the truck and partly across the headlights, smashing them back into the fenders and pushing the grillwork against the radiator. The shock was not as bad as Hanamura expected, just a crunch of metal and glass and a twisting screech as the momentum of the truck snapped the steel barrier off where it hinged into a concrete piling. Then the windows vanished in a spray of slivers as the guards opened up with their automatic rifles. It was the only small bit of luck that came his way. The guards aimed high instead of blasting the engine compartment and gas tank or blowing out the tires. The firing abruptly ceased as he broke clear of the tunnel and raced through a stream of cars entering the underground city from the other incoming road. Hanamura paid as much attention to the view in his rearview mirror as he did to the road and traffic ahead. He didn't doubt for a second that Suma's security people were alerting the police to set up roadblocks. Throwing the Murmoto into four-wheel drive, he cut off the pavement and shot down a dirt road muddied by a pouring rainstorm. Only after bumping through a forested area for 10 kilometers did he become aware of a burning pain in his shoulder and a sticky flow of fluid down his left side. He pulled to a stop under a large pine tree and examined his left shoulder and arm. He'd been struck 3 times, one bullet through the biceps, one that cut a groove in his collarbone, and another through the fleshy part of his shoulder. They were not killing injuries, but if not cared for, they could become extremely serious. It was the heavy loss of blood that worried Hanamura. Already he felt the early stages of lightheadedness. He tore off his shirt and made a couple of crude bandages, stemming the blood flow as best he could. The shock and the pain were slowly replaced with numbness and the haze that was seeping into his mind. The embassy was 160 kilometers away in the heart of Tokyo. He'd never make it through the multitude of busy streets without being stopped by a policeman, curious about the bullet-riddled truck, or by Suma's network of armed forces, who would block every major road leading into the city. Briefly, he considered making for the safety of the mate team's inn, but Asakusa was on the northeast of Tokyo, opposite Edo City on the west. He looked up through the shattered windshield at the rainy sky. The low clouds would hinder an air hunt by helicopter. That was a help. Relying on the rugged Murmoto's four-wheel traction, Hanamura decided to drive cross-country and travel the back roads before abandoning the pickup and hopefully stealing a car. Hanamura drove on through the rain, detouring around streams and rice paddies, always headed toward the lights of the city, glowing dimly against the overcast sky. The closer he came to the metropolitan mainstream, the more densely populated it became. The open country ended almost immediately, and the small back roads soon widened into busy highways and expressways. The Murmoto was faltering, too. The radiator was damaged from the collision with the barrier, and steam hissed from under the hood in growing wisps of white. He glanced at the instrument panel. The heat gauge needle was quivering into the red. It was time to find another car. Then he blacked out from the loss of blood and slumped across the wheel. The Murmoto drifted off the road and sideswiped several parked cars before crashing through the thin wooden wall of a house. The jolt brought him back to consciousness, and he stared dazedly around a small courtyard the Murmoto had demolished. He was thankful the inhabitants of the house were away, and he'd missed any furnished rooms. The one headlight still threw a beam, illuminating a gate in back of the courtyard. Hanamura stumbled through it into an alley behind the house as the shouting of startled neighbors erupted behind him. 10 minutes later, after staggering across a small park, he dropped in exhaustion and hid in a muddy ditch. He lay there listening to the sirens screaming toward his wrecked pickup truck. Once, after he felt strong enough, he began to move deeper into one of Tokyo's secluded neighborhoods. But a security vehicle drove slowly up and down the road, beaming searchlights into the park and surrounding narrow streets. It was then he lost consciousness again. When the wet cold woke him, he fully realized he was too weak to steal a car and go on. Slowly, stiffly, and clenching his teeth against the pain that returned in agonizing waves, He swayed across the road and approached the man working on the engine of his truck. "Can you please help me?" Hanamura begged feebly. The man turned around and stared dumbly at the injured stranger weaving before him. "You're hurt," he said. "You're bleeding." "I was in an accident up the street and need help." The man put his arm around Hanamura's waist. "Let me get you in the house. My wife can aid you while I call an ambulance." Hanamura shook him off. "Never mind that. I'll be all right." "Then you should go directly to a hospital," the man said sincerely. "I will drive you." "No, please," Hanamura evaded. "But I'd be most grateful if you will deliver a packet for me to the American Embassy. It's quite urgent. I'm a courier and was on my way from Edo City when my car skidded and ran off the road." The owner of the delivery truck stood uncomprehending as Hanamura scribbled something in English on the back flap of the envelope and handed it to him. "You want me to take this to the American Embassy instead of taking you to the hospital?" "Yes, I must return to the scene of my accident. The police will see to an ambulance." None of it made any sense to the delivery truck driver, but he accepted the request without argument. "Who do I ask for at the embassy?" "Mr. Showalter." Hanamura reached in his pocket and pulled out his wallet and handed the driver a large wad of yen notes. "For any inconvenience, do you know where to go?" The driver's face lit up at his unexpected windfall. "Yes, the embassy is near the junction of number 3 and 4 expressways." "How soon can you leave?" "I have just finished rebuilding the truck's distributor. I can leave in a few minutes." "Good." Hanamura bowed. "Thank you very much. Tell Mr. Showalter that he is to double what I paid you upon receiving the envelope." Then Hanamura turned and walked shakily into the rain and the black of the night. He could have ridden with the truck driver to the embassy, but he dared not risk passing out or even dying. In either event, the driver might have panicked and driven to the nearest hospital or hailed a policeman. Then the precious drawings would have probably been confiscated and returned to Suma's headquarters. Better that he trust in luck and the delivery truck driver's honor while he led the manhunt in another direction. Hanamura, on little more than guts and willpower, hiked nearly a kilometer before an armored vehicle rolled out of the darkness inside the park, swung onto the street, and sped after him. Too exhausted to run, he sank to his knees beside a parked car and groped in his coat for a dispatch pill. His fingers had just closed around the poison capsule when the armored car with military markings and red lights flashing stopped with its headlights painting Hanamura's shadow on the wall of a warehouse a few meters beyond. A silhouetted figure stepped from the car and approached. Incongruously, he was wearing an odd-looking leather overcoat cut like a kimono, and carrying a samurai katana sword whose polished blade glinted under lights. When he stepped around so his face was visible from the headlight beams, he looked down at Hanamura and spoke in a smug voice. "Well, well, the famous art sleuth, Ashikaga Inshu. I hardly recognized you without your wig and false beard." Hanamura looked up into the rattlesnake face of Moro Kamatori. "Well, well," he echoed, "if it isn't Hideki Suma's water boy."
"Water boy?"
"Stooge. You know, ass-kisser. Brown nose." Kamatori's face went livid and his gleaming teeth bared in anger. "What did you find in Edo?" he demanded. Hanamura didn't give Kamatori the benefit of an answer. He was breathing quickly, his lips in a hard grin. Suddenly he popped the dispatch pill in his mouth and bit down on it with his molars to eject the fluid. The poison was instantly absorbed in the gum line through the tissue. In 30 seconds, his heart would freeze and he'd be dead.
"Goodbye, sucker," he muttered.
Kamatori had only a moment to act, but he raised the sword, gripping the long hilt with both hands, and cut a wide arc with every ounce of his strength. The shock of disbelief flashed in Hanamura's eyes a brief instant before it was replaced with the glaze of death. Kamatori had the final satisfaction of seeing his sword win the race with the poison as the blade sliced Hanamura's head from his shoulders as cleanly as a guillotine.